house is up. Julius is up. With Ray and Cap. Caesar was a vampire. Don't make me pull a Sulla. Life of Caesar. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to one of the last episodes of Life of Caesar. I don't know why I'm doing this voice.
I like it.
It just seems fitting.
Yes.
This is my BBC voice.
Oh, I like it a lot. This is my
NPR. Hello, Ray.
Hello, Cam. How are you?
I'm very good, Ray. Welcome to Caesar 42.
Thank you.
How have you been, Ray?
Doing okay. Going on vacation soon. I'm very excited about
that.
And if our listeners have their way, this will soon be called The Life After Caesar.
Life After Caesar. Yeah, yeah. I liked that. Whoever suggested that, well done.
LifeAfterCaesar.com. Yeah.
Yeah. well,
42.
Few things before we get into it. As we may have mentioned on this here 2-4 show before, I am coming to the United States, looks like, probably around about the middle of December, staying until the middle of January.
Yay!
For those of you listening to this in the future, we are recording this in the year of
our Lord
Jesus, I mean Julius Caesar, 2015.
July 23rd,
and gonna try and make my way down to Vagina where you live, we're gonna do something.
Yeah.
But for those of you living in the US, if you want to spend time with me and maybe Ray, if I can get Ray out of Snakeville, shoot us an email, ave@lifeofcaesar.com, tell us you're interested. Probably. I'm going to be on the West Coast for a bit. I'm going to be on the East Coast. I'm going to be in Toronto, probably. Going to be in the Midwest, Utah, visiting my man, Joseph Smith, and his 50 wives. Let us know. Want to catch up with some of the American listeners while we're over there.
Yeah.
Have a beer, have a cigar, maybe have a bit of a chat. You can buy us dinner. Quite honestly.
Exactly. Chat us up, feed us.
Yeah.
We'll be happy. Yeah.
Sean McGuire asked a question via email about Plutarch. He wants to know, how long do you eye roll every time Plutarch gives an alternate account of a story? Seems to me he has a flair for embellishment, always trying to Cicero up the story a bit.
What do you think
of Plutarch?
That's a really good question, because there are several times in this episode and probably the next one we're about to do, I'm going to say, and Cam, how does that register on the bullshit meter? Because there's some stuff here that's going on. But yeah, I've got my silly memorized now for rolling my eyes so much. But, you know, some of they were working with scattered sources. There's always been trying to be sensationalists and things like that. So you never really know. That's why you want to get as many sources as you can. And then you freaking just throw the dart anyway, hoping to hit somewhere near accuracy. But like we've said this a billion times, at the end of the day, it's just a darn good story.
Yeah, and I think it's Plutarch, of all of the ancient accounts of Alexander and Caesar and everyone else he wrote about, most definitely wasn't trying to write history. He was trying to write, you know, morality stories,
He's selling scrolls.
No, Plutarch's lives. He's trying to highlight lives of these ancient people. I'm always thinking like these. They're like stories for kids to teach them about sort of principles of great and terrible people. But you know, it's loosely based on history.
Yes.
You think of Plutarch like a midday movie biography. starring some B-grade actor playing your favorite character. It's like, or an Oliver Stone thing on...
They're trying.
Are you watching the latest season of True Detective?
No, I'm still on the first season.
Right. The second season has Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn in it, but and it's great. It's really great, and it's great to see those two guys, who are actors I've admired for years, but they rarely get good material to work with.
Right.
They're brilliant. Rachel McAdams also is one of the principals. She's brilliant. But, you know, it's so hard for me to see Colin Farrell now without thinking of Oliver Stone's Alexander, which I rewatched recently for the show. And, you know, it's just weird, man, to see him.
Like, put you in a weird place in your head. Yeah.
He was so terrible as Alexander. Anywho. I'm going to give out a prize at the upfront bit of the show to the Share the Love prize to the Twitter account Just Sicko, because he has been tweeting up a storm telling people to go listen to our show on Twitter. So well, Just you. Sicko, send us an email, rv8lifeofseason.com, and we'll send, give us your address. We'll send you a little thank you gift.
Too right.
Also, I announced on Facebook last week, after consultation with Ray, that the Life of Alexander show, we have now made free for students.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a high school student or a university student and you would like to listen to the Life of Alexander show, shoot us an email at alexanderthegreat.life or rv8lifeofseason.com, doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. All goes the same place.
Yeah, in the bin. Send us an email. With the heading student discount, and send us a photo of your sister. Student ID.
Right. Sorry.
Of your student ID, and we'll give you a free account. There you go.
Yeah.
Free student account.
You're welcome.
Also thinking about making it free for unemployed people.
Ooh. Well, as unemployment has hit an all-time low in the U.S., I mean, since 1973, you'll get a couple takers. Yeah, that's what
I said. All-time low?
Well, since 1973. That's what I read today somewhere on some website. So it's got to be true.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations, America.
Thank you.
All right. Let's do it.
Quit shitting around. Let's get to
As Ray posted on Facebook last night, this is one of the last episodes. We are up to the pointy end of the show, and I'm feeling it. Ray, are you feeling it?
Yeah, I think in total seriousness. I think our voices are going to change as we go through these last couple of episodes. There's going to be a lot more emotion because this guy has been a part of our lives. For over a year now, and just to finish it up and stop it is going to be so strange. It's going to be such a mind that it's I don't know. It's going to be weird.
Yeah. No, look, we, you know, you guys listening to it for an hour or four a week, depending on how long our shows are.
Right.
But, you know, for Ray and I, it's like 20 hours a week, studying the life of this guy. I've developed an affection for him. I mean, you know, he's done a lot of horrendous and brutal and awful things, but you know, it's all in context of the time and the job and, you know, what was going on. But I'm not trying to apologize for it. I'm not trying to say he was a bad guy or a good guy. I'm just saying it it was what it was.
Yeah, it was power politics at the time, and he was better out of the most.
But as we'll see in this episode, the shit that's going down in the early months of 44 BCE, it's, you know, I guess it's still a little bit debatable, but I'm definitely feeling, I'm in the Caesar camp at this stage.
Yeah.
I start with a quote from our mate Suetonius.
Mm-hmm.
Caesar gave the impression to some of his friends that he did not wish to live any longer, and took no precautions due to his failing health. Some also say that he declared that it was more important for the Republic than himself to go on living, for he had already ample glory and power. However, if anything happened to him, there would be no peace for the state, which would relapse into civil war of a much worse kind.
Nailed it.
Yes.
But
although...
Yeah.
No, sorry.
I was just going going to say, as we're going to show, as the evidence will point out in this episode, I mean, I think that's a certain amount of BS with that statement. I'm sure he was tired. I'm sure he could have just said, you know what? Damn, I've been doing this. I've been fighting for 14 years, getting laid when I can. But I am just tired, and I'm going to be, what, 56? I'm just tired, but I can't stop. I can't give up, because once a Roman citizen, once a Roman politician gives up their power, they're going to get by somebody. So he knew he had to go on. And I think there's too much emphasis, in my humble opinion, put on that statement, because he had plans for at least the next 3 years. So, but I'm sure he was tired and worn out, and but didn't really see anybody else who could do what needed to be done.
And there is no evidence to support Sotonis' suggestion. Absolutely. That his health was failing.
Yeah.
You know, he'd had health problems all along. He'd had epilepsy, we think, since he was much, much younger, but it hasn't stopped him so far.
And it doesn't seem to have gotten worse either.
Yeah, there are really no signs of that. Well, except one incident we'll talk about later on in this show or the next. And we have to remember, of course, Sotonis is writing in the early 2nd century CE. So, you know, a lot of time has passed, but he's probably basing it on sources and letters and material that are no longer extant.
Right.
But it's the beginning of 44, as you say. Caesar is 56 in January of 44 BCE. It's, you know, it's old, well past his prime by Roman standards, but there's really no reason he couldn't have lived for another 15 or 20 years. People did live, you know, lengthy age spans.
Yeah.
As we said in the last show, I think it was at Cicero's ex-wife, we said lived to 104 or something like that.
Yeah, if he would quit, go around and on campaigns and lived an easier life and get massages every night and swim in a pool and whatever, he probably could have lived a while. But as you know, that is not what Caesar does. He has to be on the move. That's just the man he is.
And despite, again, what Suetonius says, the conspirators obviously didn't expect Caesar to die of natural causes anytime soon.
Yeah.
Or else they wouldn't have had to hasten things along.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, Cicero's letters for the first 3 months of 44 BCE were never published, so we don't even know what he thought Caesar's intentions were during this period. Do you think there's a backstory to why Cicero's letters weren't published?
Yeah, I was sitting there trying to, why in the heck, out of all, I mean, he's a megalomaniac. I mean, out of all the times of all the letters that we have, and there are so many more that did not survive, why don't we have these? I mean, who knows? Maybe he had them, but after the death of Caesar, maybe he wisely kept them to the side, but based on what the content of the letters. I mean, you really don't know, but even though Cicero is full of shit sometimes, sometimes the light that he puts out there with his letters, maybe they don't show the truth, but the shadow of the light behind that can really give you an idea of what's going on. So we really do miss those letters, but for whatever reason, whether it was intentional or not, they're not there. And so as much as we have even less for those 3 months going into 44 BCE.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, as you say, at least we get another perspective, a first-hand perspective, obviously biased in its own way, but it's a contemporary eyewitness account, and it would be great to have one about these 3 months. But as far as we know, Cicero didn't know what was going on.
As far as we know,
in terms of the conspiracy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Before we jump into this too much, if I can just give a preface for this episode, because I was thinking about something. So it's 44 BCE. He's going to be 56 this year. But again, and we've went over this he hasn't been repressive. He hasn't been cruel. He hasn't slaughtered people. There aren't heads on pikes all over the rostra or the forum. He hasn't been Sulla. But at the other side of it, his base of power is the military. It is the fact that he won the Civil War. So even though he's pardoned, even though he's forgiven people, even though he's promoted people that he's forgiven and who were once his enemy, it's still not enough. The old established families want Rome back the way it was, even though it was far from perfect, which is what Caesar's going for. The senators are used to being among the social, cultural, economic elites. They bribe their way into office. They become senators. They, after they're a senator, they get, or maybe after they're consul, they get a province, they go to the province and literally and figuratively rape the place, make a ton of cash, avoid prosecution, and start all over. I mean, this, for better or worse, is what these people are used to. It's been going on for hundreds of years. Why can't it go on now? Because of Caesar, and he's in the way. And unlike Sulla, he doesn't show any inclination of stepping aside. And so these people aren't so much worried about what's good for Rome or the idea of freedom. They're not getting what they're used to, and it's just too much. So as nice as Caesar is being, it's not enough, and he has to be removed. And like you said, his health doesn't look like it's going to take care of it for them. They know he's going to leave soon, so they have to make their plans. That's all I want.
Speaking of, that's it, all you're going to say for the next for 2 hours?
Okay. Boom, done. Turn mic off.
Yeah, drop mic. while we talk about plans, we don't really know what Caesar's plans were either, which is part of the problem with all of
this.
Yes. I mean, we know what his short-term plans were. He was going to go and take on the Dacians and the Parthians, and we'll talk about that in more detail in a sec. But
yeah.
So that would take him away from Rome for at least the next 3 years.
Yeah.
But beyond that, we don't really know. There are suggestions that he wanted to be – he saw himself as the new Alexander the Great, and he wanted to take over all of the world. There was rumors that he was going to move the capital of Rome to Alexandria.
Oh, wow.
Sorts of rumors. Was he going to make himself king? Was he going to – we don't know.
Yeah.
And I think this was the problem that the people, you know, the Senate, the Boni living at this time had too. They didn't know. No one knew what was going on in
his
head.
What's your end game, Caesar? And he didn't tell anybody. Wisely or not, he did not tell him. Maybe he didn't know, hell, but he didn't tell anybody.
And this is one of the reasons the conspirators struck when they did was he was about to leave again.
They
struck about 3 days before he was going to leave on new campaigns that were going to take him away for years. And they were like, well, if he goes off and has more victory, he's going to come back even more powerful, although that's hard to even conceive of how he could be more powerful than he already is.
Yeah,
we need to do this now. It was shit or get off the pot time for the conspirators.
Exactly.
And boy, did they shit.
That's 36 times
His first campaign was going to be going after the Dacians under King Burebista.
I like that name.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just want to do that.
Yeah, he is actually famous for making the first latte and growing a neck beard.
Did not know that.
Yeah, that's where the name.
What about turtlenecks? Never mind, go ahead.
Yeah, turtlenecks. Yeah. That's where the word barista comes from. It was from King Burebista.
Knew it.
In the middle of campaigning, he often famously would just be standing there with a little espresso machine, getting the milk right, doing a bit of latte art.
So Caesar's writing poetry and he's brewing up a cuppa. All right, that's fine.
King Burebista. Now, in all seriousness, Burebista was the king of the Getae and the Dacians, who our Alexander listeners will know of as kind of the Thracians. They're from Thracia. He unified all of these tribes and ruled them between 82 BCE and 44 BCE.
Damn, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, I read stories like this, you know, we throw these out as pithy little factoids, and I think, shit, that's a story, man. Like, I want to know that guy's story, because that's, you know, he ruled as long as Augustus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 40-odd years. Like, fuck me, man. Like, this guy must have been crazy. Like, good. Like, impressive.
Exactly. You know? But he gets overshadowed between Caesar and Augustus and Alexander whatnot. He totally gets overshadowed. But to be a king and to grow your empire and last for decades in that day and age, that's saying something. Obviously, he's got some skill.
You know, he led plunder and conquest raids across Central and Southeastern Europe, including present-day Romania, Moldova, Ukraine, Eastern Serbia, Northern Bulgaria, Slovakia, Hungary, and Southern Poland.
Damn.
Conquered all of the tribes from those areas, unified them into one big group. Strabo claims that the Getae alone could raise up to 200,000 soldiers.
Damn.
And then in 48, Burebista sided with Pompey in the Civil War.
Right.
So Caesar's like, obviously saw these guys as a threat. Maybe there was a bit of payback for siding with Pompey.
Sure.
But if they can pull together 200,000 soldiers,
that's a big,
Yeah. So he's going to go and attack them. He doesn't get to, obviously. And as it turns out, Burebista only outlives Caesar by a short time. He's also assassinated in 44 BCE by the tribal aristocracy.
Damn.
It's like the end of The Godfather, man. People are settling accounts right across the region.
Now, what gets me, and one, how would Caesar fared against them? Because like you said, he had a potential to a very large army, pull the area together. But when Caesar first attacks, first has his trouble in Gaul in 58 BCE, he almost went in that direction. But the Germans dictated where Caesar was going to go when they crossed the river. But anyway, I wonder what would have happened to Caesar, who didn't have all the experience that he has now and the resources that he has now of the state. Fighting in that area in 58 BC versus in 44 BCE, I wonder what the difference would have been for both of them, how much better or different they would have been at those two periods in time. And again, it's just kind of fun to ask what would have happened. Caesar's life could have been a lot shorter if he had gone east instead of west and gotten the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
You never know.
Although, he should have had the shit kicked out of him multiple times.
That's right. That's right.
He is the performer. It's the performer of miracles in this space. Yeah. He is just astoundingly good at overcoming superior numbers and superior everything. The Pompeys on a hill in the last episode or the one before that. Then his plan was to go and avenge Crassus's defeat at the hands of the Parthians.
Parthia.
To remind the listeners, who are the Parthians, Ray?
They were some jumped up. No, actually, it was a very impressive empire out there. Iraq, around the
Iran.
Iran, says Euphrates, whatever. But they're in that area in the Middle East, and they're actually a very large, powerful empire. They've been around for quite some time. And again, we tried to figure this out and we couldn't, but Crassus literally made every bad move heading out there, screwed up the entire army. Pretty much the entire army was wiped out. His son was killed. He was killed. He had a horrible death and he was a friend of Caesar's. So it was time to revenge that. But also they weren't just sitting around. I mean, they had invaded Syria. They were giving trouble. They had found and I didn't get this name, but they found one of the people who was loyal to Pompey back during the Civil War, and they offered to support him to restart the Civil War. So they're still causing trouble. Forget the revenge for a second. Parthia is still causing trouble, potential trouble for Rome, and they have to be smacked down. And really the only one who can do it, who's got the ability at this point, is Caesar, even though he's 56 years old.
Yeah. And in fact, a little bit down the track, they do invade Rome's territories. But Caesar was going to play it a little bit smarter than our old mate Crassus. he had already given orders for 16 legions.
Damn.
Plus 10,000 cavalry, so 16 legions, 4.5 per legion, 80, so let's say 90-odd thousand, so 100,000 troops, plus 10,000 cavalry.
He's to never be massed. He's never had it that good. Like you said, he's the master of underdog. Half the time he's coming up, fighting from the bottom. The idea of Caesar with 16 legions and 10,000 cavalry, even though Parth is big, he would probably fare very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's planning on taking it easy. The sources say that he was going to be very cautious against the Parthians. He was going to learn as much about them and their style of fighting. Mm. The old parting shot that we talked about earlier on.
Yeah.
And it's not clear from the sources whether or not he planned on conquering Persia and their territory, the bits that Rome didn't already sort of own, like Syria and Palestine and places like that, or if he was just going to put them back in their box and say, shut the fuck up, sit back down, acknowledge Rome as the dominant force in this region, and just pay us a tribute. Don't really know what he's planning. But other plans that he had, apparently he was planning on building a canal to pass through the Isthmus of Corinth.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, that's a massive undertaking. That is absolutely. I mean, so he must have been taking this Parthia campaign extremely seriously in order to do something like that. And you know, he was going to get Egypt to help him with supplies, and his informal wife, Cleopatra, I'm sure would have sent him all the dates and grain that she could possibly give him.
Informal wife.
I'm not sure what to call her.
Yeah. By the way, my wedding anniversary yesterday. Thank you for your warm congratulations at the beginning of the episode. I appreciate it. Plutarch tells us that he'd appointed a Greek architect to help build this, to maintain his supply lines, as well as support trade in the region, but probably didn't get very far before he was assassinated.
No.
Now, there were also rumors that after he'd done the Parthians, he was planning on returning via southern Russia, conquering the German tribes up there on his way back to Gaul. He could have been gone for 10 years.
Yeah.
He was doing, you know, it sounded like he was in part doing an Alexander. I'm going to go in this direction and I don't know if I'm ever coming home. You know, so meanwhile, you think about it from the Bonies' perspective. They're thinking, right, so we're going to be run by Balbus and Oppius for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Caesar's just going to be gone.
Right.
Yeah, with this massive army. He's going to have the biggest army, you know, known to Rome.
Right.
What do we do? If he goes away and I mean, we could kill Balbus and Oppius, but then what? He's going to march in with his army and kill us all.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out, what do we do here?
The decision's being made for them in a lot of ways. But I have to just go on record by saying, I'm not sure I believe the whole German part. I mean, Parthia is a massive empire. You don't just go there, bitch slap them. I mean, you leave some men in the area to guard because in case they get uppity, but you don't then just swing left or whatever around the Caspian Sea, come back and invade the Germans, which themselves was a informal, loosely confederated, whatever you want to call it, empire of warriors. I mean, I think that just would have been way too much on his plate. But this is just an example of all the rumors. He's going to be king. He's going to do this. He's going to conquer those. And rumors are just flying all over the place because Caesar is not telling anybody specifically, other than what he has to, what he's going to do. So he's kind of creating an atmosphere for rumors, and they're flying all over the place.
Yeah. So that's probably a failure on his part here, not to be clearer in articulating what his plans are and are not. Although, as we'll see as this episode progresses, even when he did seem to be clear about some things like, I don't want to be king,
right?
No one fucking believed him anyway, so what are you going to do?
Exactly.
But even during this period, he doesn't even stay in Rome all the time. In December of 45, he was apparently on the coast of Campania with, a few staff. As you do. I can't go anywhere without about 2,000 people as a retinue looking after him. I don't know about you. He had his entourage.
His entourage, that's right. 2,000 men, just in case someone decided to find out if he was a god or not by stabbing him with something. Yeah, I just thought it was, so he's down there, he's constantly working. He's got Balbus with him, he's working, he's got this large escort, and you know he's probably doing two or three things at one time. And I love this next story, and I know you're going to read some inserts. I just think this is hilarious. So he stops at a villa near Cicero, and of course, Cicero's a great man, Caesar's a great man, so they cannot not come together. But because Cicero's in the area, he's the host, and they're near Puteoli, and so Cicero's got to put a dinner out for him. Well, obviously, Cicero doesn't trust Caesar's 2,000 escorts, so he has to hire gladiators to protect his house, probably protect his women from getting raped. Who knows? But Cicero is not very happy now, but you cannot ignore when the great man is in town, so he's got to entertain him. And I'm going to call bullshit on most of what Cicero writes about the dinner, but I'm sure you have a lot of stuff you want to read. But I just think it's so funny that they come together and they're not equals, and Cicero has to be feeling this, but he's got to do a great job of putting on a dinner because this is the first man in Rome, the unofficial king of the Roman Republic. We'll be right back.
changed, haven't much to say. But man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. I told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
Nothing like Roman's rocking a guitar. Roman's not a rock.
I was actually looking for this song. I couldn't find it fast enough. Oh, come on.
Come on.
Come on, Spotify, you bitch. Oh, there you go. It's the theme from Entourage anyway. Trust me, it would have been fucking awesome.
It would have been. Just pretend it was, and it was awesome.
So funny and clever. It's going to kick in when I'm halfway through. Yeah, so...
So anyway.
Yeah, so meanwhile, while he's up in Campania, he attends the races at the Circus Maximus.
Mm-hmm.
Did you talk about this? Because I wasn't listening because I was looking for songs. Snap.
No, you go right. Not that part. Not about the races, no.
Where he apparently annoyed the crowd by answering letters and hearing petitions rather than watching the show. It's a bit like when I'm trying to watch something at night with Chrissy and she's like, you know, texting somebody on her phone, like, can you watch the show? Like, because I know you're going to turn around in a minute and go, what just happened? What'd she say? Who's
that?
Who's that?
Why is he dead? Why is he? She's a lucky
one. Stop playing words with friends. Well, texting people. Jesus Christ.
Just I'm spending time with my husband so he doesn't yell at me. Send. Okay.
But, you know, Caesar, so he's got a lot to do, man. He's the only one doing it. He doesn't have time for... Yeah, he's the only one doing it, yeah. He doesn't have time for entertainments, but people are getting upset. And this is going to be a common theme throughout this period where he's busy, he's nose to the grindstone, and people get pissy with him because he's not sharing what he's doing, sharing the power, and he's looking rude. He's just busy, he's inadvertently maybe looking rude.
And he doesn't even have a wife to share. Like, Augustus is going to give his stamp to his wife. I mean, Caesar doesn't have anyone. He's got to run through his hands at some point before a final decision's made.
Yeah. Now, when he goes to this dinner at Cicero's, he's actually staying...
I'm sorry, he is married, but I totally forgot. He is married. That's how much of a non-entity she is, but he totally ignores her.
Yeah, right. Calpurnia. Yeah. But she's not with him, I don't think. I don't think that's like, hey, babe, how was your day? Kind of marriage. I think it's like.
No, it's a good marriage. They hardly ever see each other.
There's just no mention of her really until, you know, after he's dead. He goes, when he has this dinner at Cicero's, Caesar's actually staying. Do you know whose house he's staying at?
Mm-mm.
Did you mention this? No. He's staying at Philippus's house.
Ah.
Know who Philippus was?
Oops. Hold on. My computer is... No, who? I support you.
Philippus...
Is this the turncoat? But I can't remember. There's been several...
No, Philippus is the stepfather of a young man called Gaius Octavius.
Never heard of him.
No. Well, you may do in about a month. You may hear a lot about him. Yeah. So, did you mention the part about how Caesar had to borrow gladiators from a neighbor to guard the house?
How Cicero had to borrow them, because he didn't trust Caesar's men,
No, I thought Caesar borrowed the gladiators.
No,
You got Cicero borrowed the gladiators.
Yeah, I got Cicero borrowed them because he didn't trust Caesar's men.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I misread that. You're right. Yeah. Okay. No, Cicero wrote that Caesar remained in the villa until the seventh hour, which would have been early afternoon, admitting no one.
Mm-mm.
I understand he was busy at his accounts with Balbus. Later, he walked along the shore.
Aww.
After the eighth hour, he bathed. Don't know how Cicero knew that. Was he, what, peeking through the window? Caesar's bathing.
Are those... You missed a spot. You missed a spot right there. Yeah, I get it. Anyway.
rub it hard. then he listened to the matter of Mamura without altering his expression. Mm-mm, now, do you know what that's all about, Ray?
I know that they were talking about the sumptuary. Well, theoretically, as far as we know, they were talking about the sumptuary laws, which would be of a huge interest to the high and mighty back in Rome about, you know, regulating consumption of too much food, clothes, furniture, that kind of stuff. But because, you know, because we know, or at least I know, later on, Augustus is going to take that shit very seriously and try to regulate the hell out of their behavior of the upper class. But I just imagine Caesar listening going, okay, I got to try this, but I don't think it's going to work. But that's pretty much all I know about it.
Yeah. We'll see, because I actually work for a living.
Ouch.
I know a bit more. So Mamura, do you remember our old friend Catullus?
Catullus Caesar?
Catullus was the poet who, back the time Caesar was consul, wrote some dirty limericks about Caesar. And, you know, Caesar was unhappy, but then sort of forgave him and invited him to dinner.
Right.
Caesar was friends with his father, I seem to recall. Well, Catullus had written a poem that suggested that Mamura was one of Caesar's lovers.
Mm-mm.
I did dig up the poem and I read it, and it didn't make a lot of sense to the modern ear, so I didn't bother copying it in here. But
right.
So I think part of Cicero's reason for saying that Caesar listened to this without altering his expression is because there was this speculation that Mamura and Caesar had been lovers, and there was some deep connection there between the two of them anyway. Now, Mamura, to go into a bit more detail here, had served as Prefectus Fabrum, Prefect of the Engineers under Caesar in Gaul. According to this poem by Catullus, he had also served in Britain and Hispania with Caesar, also during the Civil War. It had made him extremely rich.
Right.
As a result of, for some reason, all of his campaigns with Caesar, and he doesn't turn up in the commentaries anywhere that I can recall, but he came out of it extremely rich, so rich that according to Pliny the Elder, Mamura was the first Roman to have his entire house clad in marble.
Damn.
And the first to use solid marble columns.
Showing off now.
Can you imagine having your entire house clad in marble?
So you fall and you hurt yourself, but instead of just a scrape, you break something because it's all fucking marble. Good God.
Yeah.
Now, but seriously, but the fact that he's not mentioned in the commentaries, that's very good circumstantial evidence. I mean, why wouldn't Caesar mention him for all those years together and all the work? And he had a very important position. That's a very good, very good point that you made.
Catullus also attacks Mamura for being a big womanizer, living a scandalous lifestyle, nicknamed him Mentula, which I think we've covered before, means cock.
Right.
Accused him of having a homosexual relationship with Caesar. This, according to the books that I read, it was regarded as a lasting stain on Caesar's character. I think Suetonius or Plutarch says that. Yes. But again, sign of Caesar's clemency even going way back. Catullus apologized and was immediately invited to dinner by Caesar.
Oh, that's nice.
So when Cicero refers to no visible reaction, it's because there's a lot of backstory between Caesar and Mamura. Anyway,
because
Cicero goes on.
All it would take was a smile from one to the other, and the rumors are just going to keep going. So he probably had to poker face it the entire time.
Or anger. Like, how dare you accuse my bum buddy Mamura of breaching the sumptuary law? Anyway. Cicero goes on, Caesar, he's referring to here, was rubbed down Mm-hmm. I love a good rub down.
Yep.
No mention if there was a happy finish. And had dinner.
It probably was.
He was taking a course of emetics.
Yeah. What the fuck is that about?
Well, so, you know, in ancient times, emetics, they would use to sort of clean out your digestive system.
Uh-huh.
So you could eat and drink freely. Jeez. And we know that Caesar was known for not eating or drinking a lot. He was, you know, very simple.
Abstemious.
Yes. But in this case, for whatever reason, he had a course of emetics, so he could eat and drink more that night. He was letting it all hang out, Ray. Quite literally, I guess.
Under his tongue, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he was like, you know, I'm going to throw up, which is what emetics is, folks.
Keep this party going.
Yeah. Cicero says, so he ate and drank freely and without concern. The dinner was grand and well presented. And not merely that, but well cooked and properly seasoned. And if you ask, all went well.
Yeah.
Now, he also mentions that Caesar laid out tables and food for his freedmen and even for his slaves.
Oh, nice master.
So, I mean, I don't want to brush over that too lightly, like, because, you know, these last couple of episodes, more than ever, we're going to be talking about Caesar's character.
Mm-hmm.
Was he a brutal tyrant?
Yeah.
Well, do brutal tyrants lay out grand feasts for their slaves and their freedmen? Or do they go, no, you go and eat slobs? And it must have been unusual because Cicero made a point of mentioning it in this letter to Atticus, I think.
True.
Like, we have to stop and consider, what does this say about... Can you imagine Donald Trump putting out massive tables for his Mexican slaves?
Well, in the Trump's, in the Donald's defense, he did go to the border today and said, Latinos, love me. But I don't know. I can't imagine him doing that because that would take away from him. So, no, I can't imagine him doing that.
So, yeah, like, people listening to this, stop the podcast for a couple of minutes and just think about that. What does that say about the man's character? That it was, that he would do that at this point in his career? I don't know. I think that's very telling.
He certainly didn't have to at this point in his career.
Suetonius, talking about this period, says, his friends he treated with invariable kindness and consideration. When Gaius Oppius was his companion on a journey through a wild, woody country and was suddenly taken ill, Caesar gave up to him the only shelter there was, while he himself slept on the ground out of doors.
Damn.
Moreover, when he came to power, he advanced some of his friends to the highest positions, even though they were of the humblest origin, and when taken to task for it, flatly declared that if he had been helped in defending his honour by brigands and cutthroats, he would have requited even such men in the same way. Mm. On the other hand, he never formed such bitter enmities that he was not glad to lay them aside when opportunity offered. Although Gaius Memmius had made highly caustic speeches against him, to which he had replied with equal bitterness, he went so far as to support Memmius afterwards in his suit for the consulship. When Gaius Calvus, after some scurrilous epigrams, took steps through his friends towards a reconciliation, Caesar wrote to him first and of his own free will. Valerius Catullus, as Caesar himself did not hesitate to say, inflicted a lasting stain on his name by the verses about Mamura. Yet when he apologized, Caesar invited the poet to dinner that very same day and continued his usual friendly relations with Catullus's father.
Wow.
And, you know, I read in some of the more negative histories, they say, well, Caesar was just a cynical politician and he was trying to play everybody and keep power and by having friends everywhere, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, maybe that is true, but again, like, most people don't do that. Most people, like, you're my enemy, fuck you.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. You can take a cynical or you can take, what's the opposite of cynical view in this case? Like, give him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. The guy was, you know, even way back was forgiving his enemies.
Well,
your enemies, said
the other JC.
Julius Caesar.
Well, but the point is, yeah, if I do a bunch of nice things for people and in my mind I'm going, ha, I'm playing you, you're going to be nice to me, you don't know I'm thinking that. And so really at the end of the day, all that matters is your acts, and he's being nice to people. So it doesn't really matter, was he being a politician, was he trying to get over on them, was he manipulating them? He did a lot of good things for a lot of good people. And so maybe he recognized the value of friendship. You never know when you're going to need someone, but that at the end of the day, he was being a good person, and that's really all that matters. Unless you were German and he was cutting your hands off, or whatever, I don't know. Gold, you know.
And isn't that really the basis of the golden rule anyway? Isn't that why we teach do unto others? Because you want them to do it back to you. So yes, if you're nice to people, even people you don't like, it's because you hope they'll be nice to you, and the niceness goes around. I think that's the which of course that rule predates Christianity by a long way, but I think the whole do unto others thing is based on a level of not cynicism, but practicality. Enlightened self-interest, right?
Well, the point is, if you're being nice and you kind of mean it, and then I'm nice because you're doing it, then we're all being nice. It doesn't matter how it got started or what the underlying intentions are. The acts are all that matter. So good for him. Good for him. If I had to be a slave, I'd want to be Caesar's slave.
And by the way, I have spent an inordinate amount of time over the last couple of weeks studying these supposed connections between Julius Caesar and Jesus Christ. And I'm going to have to talk about them, I tell you, man, because, you know, I've made some jokey remarks about them over the course of the series. But the more I've studied over the last couple of weeks, I've gone, holy shit. There are so many connections, and whilst it's probably bullshit and they're probably spurious, there really are a lot of holy shit moments when you go and read through it. But this is the biggest one, I think, is love your enemies. Caesar practiced love your enemies than Jesus did.
And just like we learned through studying Caesar, through studying Alexander, I mean, there are no new ideas. Stuff that's been going on in Caesar's time or ideas or whatever were going on for hundreds of years in Alexander's time. They were probably going on from somewhere before Alexander. So the stuff that you read in the Bible or older books, I mean, there are no new ideas. Everybody's copying from someone else. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Just don't think that when someone does something, it's the first time it's been done or the first time it's been said. That's bullshit.
Except the major caveat on that.
Okay.
History podcast with dick jokes and rock music. Completely original. We invented that. Write that down.
Hell, better than invented. We actually just stumbled across it. I mean, wow. I mean, it just kind of morphed over time. That's one of the things I do like about this podcast. We just found our way as we went along. I think that's cool.
I do think about, you know, I remember that episode, your Samuel L. Jackson episode where you started swearing, and I was like, holy shit, Ray, you're fucking swearing. Stop it. And then at some point, I don't know why or when, I was just like, oh, fuck it. Let's fucking swear all the time. Like, it doesn't matter, right?
Well, someone put on Facebook, and I said, you know, we're getting near the end. And he said, no problem. Just start at the beginning and do the whole thing all over again.
We could just do this for the rest of our lives. We'll just keep doing it over and over.
Well, what I said was, next time we're going to do Caesar backwards. And so we're all going to get sad at the idea of his birth.
Yeah. Actually, we should just, don't worry. All right. So anyway, Cicero goes on. At the main dinner, there was no talk of the affairs of state and plenty of discussion of literature. To answer your question, he writes to Atticus or whomever. he was happy and enjoyed it. But apparently, Caesar was so busy in these last few months that he wasn't very accessible. As I said before, he was too busy working. And even when Cicero went to visit him at his home at some point early in 44, Caesar left him waiting in the waiting room for a long time because he was in the middle of something. Cicero claims that Caesar later said, "Can I have any doubt that I am deeply loathed when Marcus Cicero has to sit and wait and cannot simply come to see me as he wishes? If there ever is an easy-mannered man, then it is he. Yet I have no doubt that he hates me."
Yeah, that's a good 8.5 on the bullshit meter. I'm one, Caesar probably didn't even know he was there. Some aide didn't tell him that Cicero was there, because you know he would have whisked them in. And two, there are so many backhanded self-compliments in those couple of sentences. That's just vintage Cicero. I'm just like, could you pat yourself any more while you're talking about pretending to be Caesar?
And he also said that I'm extremely handsome and hung like a donkey. Like... Or a horse.
In school they called me tripod. Yeah, so just all that bullshit. Yeah. But it, still, again, just like with everything with Cicero, it does light a certain way towards an idea that, yeah, no matter who you are, Caesar is just so busy. He's looking down. He probably doesn't look up for hours, and he's not being rude. He just doesn't know that you're there. He's got to get this shit done because he's about to leave. And who's he going to leave him behind? Is he going to leave Mark Anthony, who's being an asshole, who fucked it up last time he was in charge? Oh my God, he's got so much to take care of. He needs to make it idiot-proof for whoever he leaves behind, because he's going to be gone for a very long time.
And he has been gone. Like, he's been gone for the last four years during the Civil War. He was there for a month or two, but before that, he was away for 9 years in Gaul. Yeah. Now he's going to be away for three to God knows how long years. Like, you're right. He doesn't. There's no time to fuck around. He's a busy, busy man. The power is all concentrated in his hands. Yeah. Why? Because everyone else is useless and corrupt. He knows that. It's not... My takeaway is that it's not because, you know, he wants the power necessarily. Yeah. It's because... He knows from first-hand experience that everyone else is useless and corrupt.
I was just going to say, I can add on to that, Caesar, by this point and before this point, has got so much money, he doesn't have to worry about it anymore. Money is no longer a concern of his. Like when he was younger and he was literally dodging all the people that he owed, he had to get out of town and go to Spain because he owed so much money. Money is not an issue for him anymore. But it's so much. I think he became such a plogger, if you will, just someone who's doing work. He probably in his mind sees it as, it's just easier if I am the unofficial king of Rome, because I can get all the shit done. If I start giving you power and I get the Senate back and we have tribunes of the plebs and there's censors who can tell me what to do, it's gonna screw it all up. But if I'm in charge, I know it needs to be done. I can get it all done. I think on some level, his brain probably worked like that. It was just more expedient and convenient to get everything done, and so he certainly wasn't giving the power back. He went through the motions, you know. He said, "I think you should vote for that guy," you know, that kind of stuff. But he was one running the thing. It's, I think it just made sense to him to do it that way.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And again, he knew he was getting on in years. He knew he was going back out and campaign. And you know, if I'm Caesar and I'm 56 and I'm going to go on and take on the Parthians, who are and the Dacians, the Getaeans, and the Parthians and Parthians. And I know they're all got massive armies and they're highly skilled, even though I've got a big army. Like, chances are he's going to die on the battlefield at some stage.
This
guy is a warrior. He thinks like a warrior. He acts like a warrior. He's the greatest warrior that Rome has seen, at least in several generations and perhaps ever. I mean, a good chance he's going to die on the battlefield. So he's thinking, look, I've got to set this shit up before I go, because who knows if I'm ever coming back. But anyway, but here's the point of all of this, is that there is no evidence that in this period his temperament or his character changed dramatically at all. Right. He was still, according to Cicero, extremely pleasant, moderate, generous. It wasn't the man that the conspirators hated. I think we need to make that clear. He wasn't a brutal tyrant. There's a couple of instances here where they go, oh my God, that was a bit rude. Yeah. But that's about as bad as they get, you know?
And he's not Sulla. He's not Sulla.
Yeah. He's not Sulla. He's not Labienus. He's not the Pompeys. He's not any of these guys that were complete, brutal dickheads out on the battlefield either. He is generous. He is polite. He's the nice guy tyrant. But it's not him personally that they seem to have an issue with, although they bitch about a couple of minor things. It's really this issue about what it means for the Republic, the amount of power that he has, the concentration of power, and more importantly, the fact that they don't have it anymore, as you said correctly earlier on, that their ability to make bank in their lifetime it has been severely diminished, and they don't know if it's ever coming back.
Yeah. And when you said something, when you started, it reminded me, I wrote in my notes, all this begs the question, was Caesar changing? And I think you nailed it. I don't think he was changing. He was just busy. He might snap at you every once in a while, but when he said get something done, he didn't need for you to kind of say it back to him or think it through. He's already thought it through. You just go do whatever he said. So he might snap occasionally, but I don't. I think he was, you know, he was 56. He's not going to go changing anytime soon. He is who he is. He's just got a lot on his plate. And he's got to get out, and so he's just do it, do it, do it. So it probably appeared to some people that he was in a rush, that he was just telling everybody what to do, but he needed it done a certain way because he had 25 other things to get to in that hour, you know, throughout the rest of the day. And so I think their perception is what was changing, as opposed to his, the way he was treating people.
Here we go.
Don't go changing to try and please me. You never let me down before. Mm-hmm. Don't imagine.
Get aroused.
You're too familiar, and I don't see you anymore. I would not leave you,
except to go to Parthia.
Times of trouble, we never could have come this far.
He said, come.
I took the good times
when I was council.
I'll take the bad times. Take you just the way you are.
Except I'm going to change everything about you.
Caesar, don't go changing, Caesar.
No, don't.
He's not going to go changing.
You know what? You know what we've got? Oh my God, it just hit me. We've got Caesar fever.
Caesar fever! Woo! Oh, get that on a coffee mug!
And there's no cure. There's no cure for Caesar fever.
I got a fever for my Caesar. Somebody, Jessica, get on that shit right now. We need new artwork. I got Caesar fever. Yeah. Or Ernesto Concepcion. If you're listening to this, get us some.
Yes.
And I think that is a good place to wrap up this episode, Ray. Let me read a review. You know, bit light on the reviews this week, kids, I have to say. But Daddy's, let me thank the following person. Yeah. I'm going to thank, let me see. Hey, Timon. Hey, Timon from the USA. I think there's a joke in there somewhere. Tay Hyman. Yeah. Hey, Tay. I don't know where it's going. Hateman. I don't know. Okay.
Hey, Hyman.
But it's the title of the roo is Caesarissimu. He or she writes, the godfather of podcasting successfully combines with the don of World War II history to present a well-presented narrative of JC's history. Thoughtful and insightful examination of the perspectives of such key players, sucking up much, as Cicero, Cato, Pompey, Caesarissimo, Brutus, and the rest of the narcissistic Roman nobility. It's entertaining that people get offended. Do these same babies get offended by The Simpsons? The beauty of these episodes is that they are thoroughly thought out, free, and most likely will be available for years, decades, scores even. Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah. Just a tip. If you haven't listened to this and you want to listen to it for free, get it done in the next week. Yeah. Or two.
Yeah.
Or three. Because we're gonna hide them in a vault for the future. Put them in a vault in the ground. They're too good to share.
Yeah.
I greatly appreciate how both presenters spend an immense amount of time each week and presenting this material for free. Cheers. Well, thank you, Hey Timon, and I assume that you have demonstrated that appreciation by putting some money in our PayPal account. I would hope so.
Yeah.
No mention of that in your review.
Yeah, your parents' credit card, whatever. It doesn't matter where it comes from.
Yeah. I want to thank new patrons, Steve Bedell, Doug Challenger, and Tej Mehta. Tej Mehta.
Thank you.
I know I've fucked up Tej before. I think he's re-upped his patronage, actually. But Tej Mehta. Mehta.
Thank you, Tej Man.
Tej Man, TM. Yeah. All right. And we will be back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just a warning, Ray is going away for a little while, so yeah. He's taking
I'm
more
go shark hunting.
Taking more undeserved holidays.
Yeah. Tired of the snakes, I'm going to go look for some sharks. Bigger game. Then I'm going to Australia. Yeah. Kick some ass.
Yeah. You're all talk. I got all lubed up waiting for you last time, man, and you didn't turn up.
Part of my long-term strategy.
Thanks for listening.